We all know that cash is king in the current real estate market. Buyers from all over the country are coming to Southwest Florida to live and work, and many of them are paying for their new homes with cash. For those not in a position to follow suit, there are financing options to get their offers accepted. Today we talk with Fort Myers mortgage broker Scott DeGregorio, who details the many options for financing a home. You can listen in on our conversation starting right now.
Welcome to the Royal Palmcast, the show about everything real estate with a personal touch. From the production studios of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association in Fort Myers, Florida, here's your host, Jim Sandville.
Welcome to the Royal Palmcast. I am indeed your host, Jim Sandville. Here in the studios of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association in beautiful, sunny Fort Myers, Florida. Here today, as usual, with Jerry Johnson. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Jimmy. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited. Christmas is right around the corner. You can smell it from here.
Yes.
I'm excited. It's a good time of year.
Yeah, especially smelling my coffee, too, which is giving me the coffee jitters. But
yeah.
I'm good.
You going to take a vacation, Jerry, this holiday season?
I'm going to take the week after Christmas, yes.
That's a good choice. That's a popular choice. I'm off next week, the week of Christmas.
I know. It's why I got to work.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jim.
I get to work three times as hard when you're gone because
That's true.
Do a lot more heavy lifting around here than I do. But
we get it done, though. We're a team.
Get her done every time, every time. Hey, we are the show where we talk about real estate from the perspective of the realtor mainly, but also if you're a home buyer, home seller, you are going to find out some information that will hopefully help make you a more savvy consumer. So thank you for finding us on your podcast machine. We are pleased to have you listening today. We're going to jump right into our program. This is a guest we've had on before we have with us today. His name is Scott DeGregorio. Welcome, Scott.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Welcome back.
Hanging out here, hoping you'd show up again, and darned if you aren't sitting in front of me. Scott is in the mortgage business, been doing that for 25 years plus. He's branch manager here in Fort Myers at Primary Residential Mortgage. And he's got another side, too. You may know him from his podcast. He's a podcaster. Real Estate of Tomorrow is his podcast, which you can find anywhere, right?
Absolutely, and please subscribe.
Yeah, and you're on YouTube as well. You do a number of videos there. Mm-hmm. Talking about the mortgage business.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Scott also teaches classes here at the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association, where our realtor members benefit from his expertise. Scott's a great guy. We are thrilled to have him back in the studio. Scott, what do you say today we talk about alternative mortgage programs, or alternative programs, I should say.
Love it.
For if you want to buy a house, we can get creative, right?
Absolutely.
What are some of the ways? Just kind of give me a list, and then we'll do a deeper dive on maybe each one of them. Well, what are some of the ways you can do that?
Sure. So I think if it's all right, before we get into the specifics, I'd like to give a little background as to kind of the thought process, or at least my opinion on the thought process behind them. Way back in the day when I got into the business, things were very, very vanilla. Then, of course, late 90s, early 2000s, things got stupid. Then they got really vanilla again. And a lot of these alternative programs that have come back, I want people listening to know that, in my opinion, they've come back in a responsible way. Maybe income is being verified through a different method, but these people have perfect credit, large down payments, lots of money in the bank. What made things so stupid late 90s, early 2000s was that there was no standards on anything. Credit didn't have to be good. Down payment didn't have to be good. Income didn't have to be good.
Really?
Now there's things where, hey, if one area is not good, but the other three or four areas are exemplary, we could still find ways to make it work. And I think that is a responsible medium and a good place to kind of live in a long term. Now, does it get crazy again down the road? Time will tell. We'll see. But I think a lot of the programs I'm talking about, I want people to know, I think are being done rather responsibly.
So back 10 years ago, roughly, people were getting mortgages who really had no business getting a mortgage.
Yeah, so a little bit longer than that. Leading up to the crash, I'd say, up until 2007 or so, there were people getting mortgages with terrible credit scores, no money down, no verifiable income, no verifiable employment, no verifiable assets. That is obviously a recipe for disaster. I get asked question a lot. Are we heading towards another crash? And we could probably do another podcast, but no, we live in a very different world now. And since then, some laws have passed, some regulations have passed that I think are largely good for the industry. And although we needed some alternative programs that we'll talk about in this episode, we're nowhere close to what we were back in the stupid days.
How can it be? It confounds me that a mortgage company would give a pile of cash to someone who really isn't quite qualified. What the incentive is to not lose your money if you're the one loaning it. So why would they do that? What was driving them?
You know, I think a lot of people, and there's actually a couple good movies. There's a movie called The Big Short that I think does a pretty good job of talking about it. There's another movie called The Inside Job. But to answer your question, everybody got caught up in this chaos. And in my opinion, a kind of absurd concept that real estate's just never going to go down. Starting back in the 80s and 90s, there was a massive deregulation in the banking industry. And what was happening a lot of times is these people, these banks were lending money, but immediately selling the mortgages and getting their principal back and their profit margins.
So they were good.
Yeah, exactly. They were good. And, you know, it became kind of a race to the bottom where, oh, you'll do it with 10% down, I'll do it with 5. You'll do 5, I'll do 3. You'll do 3, I'll do 0. You do 0, I'll lend you more than the house is worth. I'll lend you 105%. There were actually loans back then where you could borrow 125% of the value of the house at closing on a purchase. So you close in a house, put $75,000 in your pocket, and you didn't really need credit for it. That's not a good plan.
Doesn't seem sustainable to me. I'm no expert.
But you know, if you look into, you know, it's a technical conversation, but if you look into it, many, many people made many, many, many millions of dollars along the way. And I would think that was probably their incentive more so than the long-term economic health of the planet, which as it turned out did not bode well.
Yeah. So what group of professionals are to blame?
You know, that's a tough question. I would say probably everybody had their finger in it, but a lot of it really started at the government level. What people don't realize, the government was quick to blame the mortgage industry, but what people didn't realize was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac offered what were basically no-doc loans, as their response to the subprime crisis. And a lot of these things were being allowed. One thing that's not talked about a lot, and I think played a huge role, had to do with the ratings companies. And what they were doing a lot of time is they were rating these packages of mortgages as AAA when they full well knew they weren't.
Like Moody's.
Exactly. And that's a disaster. So investors on Wall Street were investing in these pools of mortgages thinking that, hey, these are AAA rated. I have nothing to worry about. But the people that were hiring the ratings agencies were telling them, if you don't give me AAA status, I'm going to go to your competitor and you're going to lose millions and millions of dollars. So the Big Short is the only movie I've ever seen or book that I've read that has referenced the role the ratings agency played in it. But I personally put a lot of blame at their feet.
So these were the days of Gordon Gekko when greed was good.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
For lack of a better term.
Well done, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Wow. I'll bet today the pendulum has swung a bit. Maybe far enough or not far enough?
You know, it's tough to say. You know, the challenge with guidelines is no matter wherever you draw the line, there's a group of people just on the wrong side of that line that deserve a mortgage. Mm-hmm. And there's just no perfect answer because you have to draw the line somewhere. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the good news is now is there are programs for people where instead of verifying their income through tax returns and traditional methods, you could verify it through how many, you know, the amount of money they're depositing into their business bank accounts or their personal bank accounts. There are programs now for people that maybe had a major credit problem, a bankruptcy or foreclosure or something, but there was a reason why it was there. And it was a short-term reason, and that reason is past them. So maybe they don't have to wait 2 or 4 years or sometimes 7 years to get a mortgage. There's other programs out there now where if you're buying an investment property, the cash flow on the investment property is all they look at. And you might look at that and think that's ridiculous and that's careless and irresponsible. But if you look at it, if you know these people are putting down typically 25% or more, great credit, lots of money in the bank. if you're buying an investment property and the thing makes profit every month, and the rental income is determined by an appraiser, so it's not, you know, it's not some inflated figure, then, and again, you're putting down a lot of money and you're financially stable.
Got some skin in the game.
Why would you let that go to foreclosure?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and again, if you're putting down 25%, you could just sell it. So, you know, if you look into the real risk factors of some of these loans, whereas on the surface they might seem risky, if you really dive into it and look at it objectively, I think it makes a lot of sense. The no money down piece of it, coupled with some of these alternative income calculations, is really where it gets dicey. If you're putting down a lot of money, it's a different mindset.
Yeah. So if I walk into your business and apply for a loan, you're going to look at me differently and apply different criteria if I'm buying a single family versus a duplex, correct?
In many cases, yes. And you know, you bring up the duplex thing of it. I've worked with a lot of people to help them begin their investment portfolio as a real estate investor, and everybody thinks they're going to put down 20% or 25%. And you know, I've helped a lot of people where they buy a duplex maybe with FHA financing, 3.5% down. They live in one side. They live in there for a period of time. You know, a year, 2 years, 3 years. If you live in it too short, it's occupancy fraud, so we don't want to do that. But you live in it for a period of time, then eventually rent out that other unit and then buy another one, live in that for a while, buy another one, live in that for a while. So you can, you know, you could put together a portfolio. I have this couple I'm working with now where they just bought their third fourplex. And every time they lived in it, and then they eventually refinanced it, and then they got another mortgage on the next one. And, you know, they're going to own 12 rental units.
Yeah, next thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire, huh?
Absolutely. Wow. It's a very smart way of doing it. Yeah. So, you know, again, working with the right person, understanding how to leverage things, understanding people's goals and objectives enables you to put together a proper plan for people.
Who can't get a mortgage? Somebody walks in and they say, here's my story. You say, nope.
Really, really low credit scores. Are still very difficult.
How low?
Sub 550, I would say. And I can't say, I mean, you know, maybe there's something out there for everybody to some extent, but sub 550 starts to get very, very difficult. Certainly lower credit scores with very little or no down payment is very difficult. Somebody who just became self-employed, regardless of how well qualified they are, that's a difficult obstacle. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I was working with somebody recently and they were of retirement age, but they had recently come out of retirement, started a business. I couldn't use that business, but they had a fair amount of money in the market, and we were able to do something called asset depletion, where we could stream income from their assets, and they were able to qualify that way. So there's a lot of creativity involved for, you know, a good loan officer that knows how to really balance and kind of weigh the guidelines and decipher everything. But You know, and the people, one of the things, the mindsets that we have in the branch, one of our kind of mottos is we don't say no, we say when. So, hey, you don't qualify now. Fine. Here's a 6-month plan. We're going to work together. I'm going to hold your hand, so to speak. And down the road, we'll get you there. I have a great story for you along that side. I met with somebody who didn't qualify a few years ago now, but I gave her a 12-month plan, and she got it done in about 7 months. And I said, I got to ask you, where did this motivation come from? This is so interesting that you got it done so quickly. And she said, when I walked out, I'll shorten the story, but she said, when I walked out on my ex-husband, he told me I'll never amount to anything.
Ooh.
And she had immigrated to this country, and she said, the first thing I did was I learned your language. Then I put myself through nursing school, she said, and then I got myself financially stable. And the last part of my plan was to invite him to my housewarming party. And I said, oh, girl, put me in.
Wow.
I want to be a part of that team. So he didn't show up to the housewarming party, but I did, just in case. And it was a cool thing.
Wow, that really lit a fire under her, huh?
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Tell me about the underwriting process. First of all, what does that mean, underwriting?
So the underwriter is the person that ultimately says yes or no on the mortgage. And what an underwriter does nowadays is they validate the information. So, you know, a lot of approvals now are done through computers, something called automated underwriting. And, you know, I plug into the automated underwriting system that the person makes X dollars per month and has a certain amount of money in the bank. The underwriter's job is to make sure that the paperwork supports what I input, that they do, in fact, make that much money, and the income meets the guidelines of the agencies, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, VA, et cetera. You know, they have the money in the bank, like I said, but did it just get deposited there? And if so, where did it come from? And can we document those things? So the underwriter ultimately does a lot of validation. They review the title work and the appraisal and everything else. And their job ultimately is to make sure that that loan can in fact be sold or insured or guaranteed, depending on how you're doing it, but basically, you know, accepted by the agencies. And that is their, that's their primary role. And it's complicated because, you know, again, thousands of pages of guidelines, and every person's financial situation is just a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do you package that up to give it the best chance of getting approved is an art form.
Where do first-time buyers stand these days?
So the biggest challenge in this market with first-time home buyers is getting their down offers accepted. But outside of that, there's really a lot of good programs for first-time home buyers. There's a lot of very little money down programs. There's a lot of really good down payment assistance programs that I work with to help people. You know, the some changes that have happened recently, Jim, that I'm excited about is just recently automated underwriting started counting people's rent payments towards their risk analysis and approval or denial. And that makes a lot of sense because there's a lot of good people out there that are making their housing payments, never skipping a beat. Maybe they don't, you know, maybe they don't have a lot of money left over to save, but they're making their rent payments and they're not skipping a beat. And now they're going to buy a house and maybe their payment's even less. Hmm. And for those people, down payment assistance programs make a lot of sense. And there's a lot of those good things out there. For a long time, down payment assistance was really limited to people on the lower end of the income scale. But there's a lot of programs now that are pretty broad in the area of income allowances, and it's a step in the right direction for the mortgage industry.
What might be a typical scenario where there is an assistance program in play?
I'm actually working on one now where the person's recently divorced. The divorce kind of left her in a tough situation, but very stable employment, good credit. Her world is good. She just doesn't have the money. And in her particular case, not only was the rental prices through the roof and expensive, they were also extremely difficult to find. So she was able to buy herself a home, utilize the down payment assistance. You know, there are certain financial experts, I'll put in quotes, out there that say you should only buy a house with 20% down and you should rent it till you save up enough money to do that. And the challenge is that when you look at home values appreciating, when you look at the risk of interest rates going up, it's actually a losing race for most people. So I think a lot of times if you could come up with the money to avoid the down payment assistance, you should, because typically interest rates are a little bit higher on those programs, and long term that money's anything but free. But if the difference is renting or down payment assistance, definitely look at the DPA option of it. One thing I like to tell people is they have to remember that rent is 100% interest.
Okay. We do need to take a very quick break here. So if you'll hang in there with us, Scott, we'll talk a lot more about mortgages right after this.
Hi, this is Julie Lepore with FERPTA Solutions, and you're listening to the Royal Palmcast.
Hi, I'm Jennifer DeRocher, and you're listening to the Royal Palmcast.
Hi, I'm Bill Risser, and you're listening to the Royal Palmcast with Jim and Jerry. This place is amazing.
Do you know a student who could use help with college tuition? Well, if you're a realtor and you have children, this may be for you. The Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association has announced the creation of the Kevin Williamson Scholarship Program for sons and daughters of realtors who are pursuing higher education. To qualify, students must be Florida residents and have at least one parent who's a realtor. Scholarships start at $1,000, and applicants are judged based on extracurricular activities, financial need, and other criteria. This program is named in memory of our late president-elect, Kevin Williamson, who was well known in the community for his generous support of those in need. For eligibility and criteria information, visit the rpcra.org website. Click on the magnifying glass search icon, type in scholarship, and press enter. Then click on scholarship from results. We wish the best of luck to all. We hope you're enjoying the Royal Palmcast, a production of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association, your association for realtor resources, services, and education in Southwest Florida. We're committed to the success of all our members and advocate for property rights, both commercial and residential. We continue our efforts educating and influencing policymakers at all levels about issues important to realtors and homeowners. RPCRA also leads the way with community involvement, market analysis, and member engagement, all of which contribute to a superior realtor experience. With two convenient locations in Fort Myers and Cape Coral, the staff of RPCRA is here for you. You'll find us online at rpcra.org and across social media, including Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, SoundCloud, and all major podcast apps. Be sure to subscribe, like, share, and follow us to stay current on all our upcoming classes and events. Now, back to Jim Sandville and the Royal Palmcast.
We are back on the Royal Palmcast in Fort Myers, Florida, talking about real estate, talking in particular today about mortgages with our guest, Scott DeGregorio. Scott, before the break, you touched on a few of the creative approaches you can bring to obtaining a mortgage to buy a home. I hear a lot lately, and it's been around for a while, reverse mortgages. What's going on there? What is that? I think I get it, but I'm not sure.
So you're talking to me about one of my favorite subjects to talk about, and it's I would say that the reverse mortgage is arguably the most misunderstood financial product, certainly the most misunderstood mortgage product that's out there.
No.
It's common, and you know, a lot of people hold belief systems about those products, about reverse mortgages, based on the way they were decades ago, and they're just not that way anymore. And specifically, what I mean is the notion that people are signing their house over to the bank. And it used to be that way. It used to be if you signed the reverse mortgage where for $200,000 on a $400,000 house, you tragically passed away a week later, you'd lose your house. And that's just not the case anymore.
This is when you own the house free and clear.
You know, again, another misconception. No. So depending on your age, they'll lend a certain percentage of your home's value. So maybe if you're in your 60s, they'll lend about 50% of the home's value. So if you have a mortgage and you want to pay that off, and you know, access the rest of the money through a couple of different ways, it's there to be had. What a lot of people, and specifically for your audience, what a lot of people don't realize is that you could use a reverse mortgage as a purchase transaction. And the first one I ever did, a woman had sold her homes, I believe, if I remember correctly, it was from Arkansas, and she took her, you know, $175,000, and she was coming down here to pay cash for her dream home, only to shockingly find out that dream homes down here cost differently than dream homes in Arkansas. And this person was on a very small Social Security income, if I remember correctly, under $900 a month in total income. And what we were able to do is we were able to get her a $350,000 house. She put down the $175,000 cash. We got a reverse mortgage for the other $175,000. She had no monthly payments on it.
Wow.
And she was able to, in fact, buy her dream home. And you know, if you look at the number of baby boomers retiring, and a lot of people lost their life savings during COVID and the economic, you know, issue we had in, you know, last year, it's a really, really, really valuable tool. But man, we need a lot of education about it, both in the consumer end as well as the real estate professional end of things.
Are they becoming more popular these days, the reverse mortgages?
I think they are. I don't have a statistical answer to that, but anecdotally, I believe that they are. It's a really powerful tool for people. I remember the first one I ever did, it wasn't a purchase, but the first one I ever did, this woman, her husband had passed away, and with his passing, she lost his income. And she literally swapped back and forth every month between buying food and her medicine. And at that closing, I was able to wipe out her mortgage. It was a small mortgage, but you know, small is relative. I was able to wipe out her mortgage and give her a monthly income stream. So her overall cash flow improved by $600 or $700 a month, which to her was life-changing. And I'll never forget the wet spot of tears on my shirt at closing, because she was so happy. Thank you for changing my life. to be able to help somebody at that at that stage is really a blessing.
Oh, that's got to make you feel good.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Wow. You're fighting the good fight for the good people.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Good stuff. What if I have teenage kids and they're just starting to learn about money? Maybe they got a little account allowance, a little pin money in there. What advice should I give them about how to prepare for the day when you will want a mortgage?
So, you know, I think, and it's another passion point of mine, we've never talked about it, but it is, and just basic financial literacy and education. I've been trying to get myself to the point where I could speak to maybe eighth graders and high schoolers around town in a financial literacy course. So if anybody listening has an angle to get me in, I'm more than happy to volunteer my time. But I think a couple financial things that people need to understand is – number one, the importance of credit, how credit works, how to establish credit. I know with my children, to tell you a quick story. So my eldest daughter was ready to buy a car. I have an old car that I've passed down for my three kids. They get it for 2 years and then they have to get their own car and it moves on. So my eldest was ready to buy her first car and it was a relatively inexpensive car. What I did was I put down half of the money cash. The other half of the money I put in a CD, and then she was able to take out a loan against that CD. Payment was about $100 or $105 a month, but now she has an installment loan that she's making. I did not have to co-sign on it, which I'm not a fan of, and she was now establishing credit. All of my kids, when they turn 18, I get them a small credit card that I monitor and I manage for them. So the first thing is establishing credit. The second piece of it is the understanding of the need to pay yourself first. Everybody of all income levels, I don't care how much you make, you could spend every dime. And one of the things I've taught my kids and I've taught countless clients is that having money has nothing to do with how much you make and everything to do with how much you spend. Now, obviously, there's, you know, it's at a certain income level that may not apply, but to 90% of people, it does. I know people that make $100,000 a month and spend $105,000 a month. Granted, lots of fun toys, but at the end of the day, they're broke. So at establishing that habit of paying yourself first. Now you're coming in as a first-time homebuyer, a young first-time homebuyer with established credit, money in the bank, and a savings history that's established. That goes a long way. The third thing to economic principle that I think we all need to teach our children is the importance, and this really isn't mortgage-related, but the importance of compounding interest and what it means. You know, the truth is this. If you have a bunch of money in an account and it sits there for 40 or 50 years, I ran an analysis for somebody. They had $47,000 in the bank at 20 years old. When they were going to be 67 years old, that account would be worth about $13 million. And they need to understand that they need to invest in themselves early and consistently. A lot of people right now trying to get rich on the market and time the market and pick stocks and stuff. And you know, I'm a simpler person than that. Warren Buffett says put money in an S&P fund and just let it grow. Now, everybody has to speak to their financial advisors, and I'm not qualified to give that advice. But a lot of times, these fancy get-rich-quick things just blow up in people's faces. Mm-hmm. So put money aside on a regular basis. If your company offers a 401k with a match especially, take it. So now, not only do you have you're paying yourself first and you have some down payment money, now you actually have some money in, you know, in another account in the mortgage industry we call reserves. Now at this point, you're checking all of your boxes. Probably the last thing I would say is to keep that debt low. Everybody, there's a saying I love, live like nobody's willing to today so you can live like nobody's able to tomorrow. Live below your means, save.
So what account specifically type of account was that you put the big wad of money in there and it compounds that greatly?
Everybody should speak to a qualified licensed financial professional and advisor on it. But, you know, Warren Buffett says to put the money into an S&P index fund. Companies like Vanguard.
So not just a savings account.
No.
A fund of some kind.
Yeah. You know, the problem with bank accounts, and a lot of people think I'm going to be safe, I'm going to put my money into a bank account. The challenge with that is inflation. If the rising cost of goods and services is inflation, inflation. So if the cost of everything you buy is going up 2 or 3% a year, quite a bit more than that today, but even historically 3% a year, and your money's in a savings account earning essentially zero, the savings account is the only place you're guaranteed to lose money. And a lot of people don't factor inflation into things. And, you know, I don't blame them. That there's no financial literacy out there. I have two kids in college now, and my son's in high school, and they are just not taught about any of these real world financial principles. But, you know, they could certainly calculate the Pythagorean theorem if they need to. Mm-hmm. I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying I don't know that should completely exclude the personal financial
stuff. They're
missing
basic financial education.
We are.
Yeah. You know, in ninth grade, I had a class called Consumer Economics. Best class I ever took. And mm-hmm. I learned things like how to write a check.
Yes.
How to do your taxes, a basic 1040A or something.
Sure.
It was fantastic. And I took some of the lessons from that class today. I'm not using the lessons I learned in all those classes, believe me. But that one really, really paid off. And I indeed know people who, through various circumstances, maybe they didn't have to work because their spouse was making a good amount of money, didn't know how to write a check.
Yeah.
And people are in their 50s.
Mm-hmm.
In their 50s. And, Jim, how do you write a check again? What's that line for? Yeah. What is this no one under it? What? So it's shocking to me. But so they are not teaching this anymore?
I know that I speak to thousands of people a year through every socioeconomic class you could think of in background and education level and success level and blah, blah, blah. And the overwhelming majority just do not understand basic financial principles. And what I deduce from that, coupled with my children's experience, is that there's a gaping hole in this. And, you know, whenever I sit down with people, I try to, yes, I'll get you a mortgage, but how do I make sure that every single client that I work with walks away smarter about money than they were when they met me? And, you know, going back to another episode we did where we talked about the changing industry, you know, the changing state of the industry, how algorithms are trying to replace us. An algorithm's not replacing that anytime soon. And that is invaluable advice that you could give people. So there's a hole there. Again, I'd love the opportunity to fix it, but it's getting integrated into the school board is a complicated process, I've learned.
Mm-hmm. I want to react to a couple of things you've said during our conversation today. Earlier, you talked about in the underwriting process that if circumstances that are understandable caused your income to shift downward mm-hmm. suddenly, but it's explainable, that is taken into account. You say, gee, I lost my job there because of the economy and then got cancer, but 2 years later I'm fine. That's how do you quantify that within the process?
You know, it's a difficult question, great question, but a difficult one to give just a direct answer to, because you really have to look at the totality of the situation. But as a rule of thumb, what I tell people is the mortgage industry is okay if life kicked you and you fell down and you've gotten back up. Where it runs into problem is when I'm looking at a credit report and there's late payments in 2011, 12, 13, 14, 15, all the way up till present. That is now a systemic problem with their finances. And what a lot of people don't realize is they think that bad credit comes from lack of income. The reality is that bad credit often comes from just lack of fiscal responsibility. They're literally not in the habit of sitting down and paying their bills every month.
Yeah, maybe they should take that class in high school we talked about.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
Huh, interesting. You also mentioned a few minutes ago you're not a fan of co-signing for a loan. Talk about that.
So I've had countless people come to me over the years, and when I told them what their credit score was, they were just shocked because they did not realize that their child or whomever was not making their payments on the car loan or the student loans or something. And frankly, earlier in my childhood, it was reversed. I actually had to put a house in my name for my parents. And after my mom passed away, I one day found out that my house was facing auction. And I had 4 days to kind of save it.
And your good name is being sullied.
100% it was. And taxes hadn't been paid. Ooh. Insurance had lapsed. And I was unaware of it. So the advice I give people is if you could avoid co-signing, avoid co-signing. I understand when your children are in need, I understand the way that pulls on your heartstrings, but if I was to ever co-sign for my children, I would be very clear with it. Every month you pay me, every month I pay the bill, because that ensures that I'm monitoring my credit. And I would also do it in a short-term thing. You know, I do plenty of mortgages where there's a co-signer. It's a very common thing. And I think it needs to be game plan. Hey, we're going to co-sign because your situation's not there good on your own, but we're going to put together a 6, 12, 24-month plan so you can do it on your own. And then we're going to refinance you to get your co-signer off. So that way you're not involved in this for 30 years. You know, when people are entering into business relationships, financial relationships, they do it when things are well, and they don't realize how resentments can form, and just things can change. People could get married, people could get divorced, whatever the situation, people could pass away tragically, and they don't factor in for those what ifs. So I think on the house side of things, if you're co-signing, a good loan office is going to put together a game plan where you have it's a short-term window you're helping and not a multi-decade commitment.
You know what I'd be interested in seeing on a related topic is how many people who want a mortgage, want to buy a new home, are falling off the qualification list due to the high price of houses, gone up 22% in the last year here in Southwest Florida, whereas incomes have remained relatively stable. So it stands to reason that people are, no way you're going to qualify based on your income and the price of that house that a year ago you could afford.
Sure.
How fast are people falling off that list?
So there's a lot of talk in the media about this. And for people that follow me on Facebook and all over social media at Fort Myers Mortgage Expert, they'll know that I talk about this a lot. So the affordability index is what you're talking about.
Right.
And for people that follow me at Fort Myers Mortgage Expert on social media and everything, know that although it's going up, it's still relatively low compared to what it was. Yes, home prices are going up at a fair pace. There is some wage growth out there, but interest rates have been historically low. And when you put those three pieces together, things are still good. Now, the other piece that the media gets tragically wrong with this is they talk about the median sales price. The median sales price has gone up. You know, for those of you that remember economics from back in the day, the median is the middle, not the average. And what's happening in the market is there's just not houses on the lower end of the scale anymore. You don't have houses, for the most part, being listed in the 175 range. But you have plenty of houses being listed in the 800,000 range. So that disproportionate quality of that pulls up the median price. It doesn't necessarily mean that if you bought a house for $400,000 a year later, it's worth, you know, 22% more, $488,000. In some cases, it is. But that's the thing you have to look at. What is getting challenging, though, in this market because of just lack of availability is homes in the price range for our teachers, our police officers and first responders. I'm actually active with the Lee County Affordable Housing Foundation. And I do a little bit of work with the Lee County Attainable Housing Foundation. And it's problematic because some of those people are getting priced out of the market just through an absolute lack of availability. And when those lower priced homes do hit the market, there's a swarm of cash investors, you know, snatching up that inventory. And it's that piece of it is definitely making it difficult. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about another crash coming. I can speak on a whole episode as to why that's not going to happen again, but I think this situation is here to stay for a while.
So no bubble in your estimation?
There's no bubble at all. And I mean, just to touch on a couple points real quick, over 60% of houses in Lee County are free and clear. Out of the ones that are financed, 80% of them have 30% equity position. You can't have a real estate collapse with that much equity. It's just math. Secondly, people who are getting mortgages nowadays earn them. And thirdly, people are buying houses nowadays to live in, vacation in, or rent out. Whereas back in the day, people were buying houses to speculatively flip. So it's an entirely different set of circumstances. You know, another thing that I talk about a lot is the way to really predict the market accurately is to look at the average age of a first-time home buyer, which is 33 right now, and then look at birth rates from 33 years ago. And if you do that, you'll see that we're in year two of a massive five-year spike in birth rates, which means that we have three more years of continued demand coupled with the urban desertion, all the people moving down here, and then compare that to new construction starts being low because of supply chain issues and all the other things. So you put those things together, and I can't see any scenario where there's a massive housing collapse moving forward.
Interesting.
At least short term, right? Yeah. At least the next couple, 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Interest rates are going to stay, what, 3, 3.5 through 2022?
You know, I don't think so. Inflation, the Federal Reserve was calling inflation transitory, meaning it was short term. I was very, very public on Facebook saying that there's no way this is transitory inflation. Sure enough, last month they changed their opinion on that. The Fed, I know, is speaking today. And, what's going to happen with inflation is inflation pulls up interest rates, and inflation's not going anywhere for a while. And, a lot of people might ask why that is. Well, mortgages are packaged up and sold into something called a mortgage-backed security bond. Why would somebody invest in a mortgage-backed security bond that's going to earn them 2-2.5% if the cost of goods and services is going up 5 or 6%? You're guaranteed to lose money. Mm-hmm. The only way for people to buy those mortgage-backed security bonds is for the yield to be higher, in which case the rate has to be higher. Mm. So higher inflation equals higher rates with unwavering certainty. So I think rates are going to go up. The other piece that's happening is the Federal Reserve has been buying mortgage-backed securities since COVID, which has artificially lowered rates, and they have been very adamant that they're going to slow down their purchases by $15 billion a month less. I've made a video on Monday where I predicted that in today's announcement they're going to drop it to $30 billion a year less. Mm. So now we have less supply, or less demand rather, which is going to cause rates to go up. So yeah. rates are going to move up, not through the roof. Maybe we end up in the fours. Historically, people have to understand that's still a maniacally low interest rate.
Right, right. Yeah, I've seen it 18%.
Of course.
A bunch of years ago. Yeah. Wow, interesting times we live in.
We do.
Yeah. So, hey, Scott, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to come chat with us today.
My pleasure.
It's been most enlightening. Where can people get in touch with you if they want to make contact?
So, we mentioned earlier Real Estate at Tomorrow podcast. Please follow me there. And in addition to that, Fort Myers Mortgage Experts is where you will find me on social media. That is my website address. You'll find me on YouTube there. Follow me on Facebook. I'm always doing videos touching on these topics. I do Facebook Lives all the time with that.
Okay, very cool. Hey, Jerry, I want to thank you, too, for coming in here and running the board so effectively.
That always makes me smile when you say that, Jim.
Well, I mean, he's been twisting the dials and moving the knobs.
I've been sliding the sliders.
Sliding the sliders, yeah.
Yes, well, thank you.
This guy knows how to...
job, too.
Well, thank you so much. You are very generous with your praise, I'm sure. Hey, I also want to thank, before we get too silly here, thank all of my colleagues here at the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association for their help and support in making everything we do fun, because, well, not everything, but almost everything we do is fun. We really enjoy coming to work and getting to talk with interesting
great
people
team.
Like Scott. Yeah, it's good stuff. And I want to thank you, the listener, for finding us on your podcast machine. We truly do appreciate it. If you are so moved, we would appreciate it if you would drop us a line. You can send an email to shows@rpcra.org. shows@rpcra.org. My name is Jim Sandville, and we will look forward to seeing you again next time.
Thanks for listening to the Royal Palmcast. Be sure to listen again every week on your favorite podcast app and visit the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association website at rpcra.org and our social media pages, including Facebook and our YouTube channel. Check out all of our RPCRA platforms and make sure to subscribe and share. For information about this show or other RPCRA productions, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at shows@rpcra.org. This has been a production of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association.